There's been a lot of talk and focus recently on global conflicts, namely between Russia and Ukraine, and how other nations should or shouldn't be getting involved. Our own Congressman Matt Rosendale recently made headlines opposing any U.S. involvement in the Russia-Ukraine conflict, but this goes back to the question that we've been asking for decades. What is America's involvement in foreign conflicts, or rather, what should it be? We explore that question in this episode of the Voices of Montana podcast with Chris Engen, a grassroots engagement director with the nonprofit organization Concerned Veterans for America. Chris shares his story as an Army veteran and how the treatment he received for a life-changing injury led him to begin advocating for change both to our country's foreign policy and VA health services. Chris's story here is pretty eye-opening and jaw-dropping, and without spoiling too much, I think we'll leave you with a few things to think about. With that said, let's dive into Tom's chat with Chris Engen.
Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on, Tom.
Thank you for being here. I appreciate that. And I appreciate your service as well. Chris coordinated military funerals, funeral honors, and participated in about 1,100 of these in his career, and then deployed to Afghanistan, where he served in the 503rd Military Police Battalion, and deployed there, suffered an injury, hit by a rocket-propelled grenade, received the Purple Heart. Now coming back home, started his own business and found this passion for veteran advocacy. I want to talk about that too, Chris, and your service. And, of course, as you mentioned here, struggles getting care from the Department of Veterans Affairs have got you here. But I got to go back to where, there's this discussion, especially from the Concerned Veterans for America, the discussion about endless war. You see the conflict here. I mentioned the conflict all over the place. The question is, what is America's involvement around the world? What should America's involvement be around the world?
Yeah, one of the things that we're seeing, I mean, we have troops, and you actually just, you brought this up right before I came on here, our involvement around the world. We have troops in 159 countries on this planet. That's 159 different places that we are actively engaged in some fashion. And we can't be a country that empire builds, and we cannot be a country that becomes the world's police. And so we believe that the solution to our engagement around the world is a foreign policy that's based in realism and restraint. Is it realistic for us to be involved? Does it actually serve our vital interests, our national security and our national prosperity? And if that's not the case, we shouldn't be involved.
I think, though, that case can always be made. And maybe I've done too much talking. Go ahead, and then I'll come back. But I've done too much talking already, Chris, so forgive me.
Well, and I think you're spot on that we're constantly if we're not paying attention to whether we realistically should be involved, whether it affects Americans and American interests, we're still sending troops into locations whether or not they serve those interests. If we feel like maybe it's the right thing to do, and making emotionally based decisions instead of making realistic decisions. And then once we've made that realistic decision, should we be involved? We tend to go right to let's send in military troops instead of trying to find a way to use all of the resources that we have at our disposal to solve the problem and to make sure that we've worked with that country or worked with that group of people. Instead of just sending in our military right off the bat, our military should always be a last resort.
Yeah, I'll give you that. That seems to be what America's known for. But 159 countries. Now, that might surprise a lot of people. I'm going to ask a simple question about why is that bad? Why is our involvement in many of these places now? And I guess you talk about realistic decisions, and I like that. That might be defined differently by different administrations or different military leaders. But we leave those areas. Do we leave a gap behind? Why is our involvement bad from that perspective?
Yeah, so if we're in 159 countries, there's not another empire in the history of our planet that has survived trying to take over the globe. And not to say that Americans have this idea that we are trying to take over the globe, but if we're stretching ourselves to the point where we literally are across the globe, we're not going to feasibly be able to pay for that and be fiscally responsible. I mean, we're looking at a national debt of $30 trillion at this point. You know, how are we going to continue to pay for these engagements? So we have to look at what that looks like. So it's terrible when we start looking at what is it doing to us right here in America by having all of these troops spread thin. And then when there is an active engagement that needs to happen and you have troops spread across the globe, what's going to be that response time if we need those troops, if they're spread too thin and we don't have the reaction force that we need.
But then what is realistic decisions defined by?
Well, it should be defined by three things. You know, does it affect our national security? Does it affect our vital national interests? And does it affect American prosperity? And if it doesn't affect any of those things, then we shouldn't realistically be involved.
But isn't it pretty easy to make a case that, I guess, believable or not, right, that our security interests exist today in today's world well beyond our borders? Our critical interests, even our prosperity interests, exists well beyond our borders.
Right, and maybe that's a problem in and of itself there. But when we start looking at what our capabilities are militarily as well, if we look at the over-the-horizon capabilities that we have, we don't have to have boots on the ground in Afghanistan anymore. And the withdrawal from Afghanistan, while didn't happen the way it should have, we should have withdrawn from Afghanistan over a decade ago. And so when we look at where our troops are and what our capabilities are, do we need our troops there? And so we need to pay attention to that. We need to be realistic with that. And so that when we start talking about this, we shouldn't have one entity that makes that decision. And well, that's what we're seeing today, whether it's the Bush administration, the Obama administration, or even this administration. What we need to pay attention to and look at is the constitutional war powers actually belong to Congress. They don't belong to our president. And so when we are paying attention to what's realistic and where we should be involved, that should be a debate that is actually done by our elected officials on the congressional floor, making those decisions on where we send our troops and where we should be involved. And they've completely abdicated that responsibility and abdicated that power and given it to the presidential administration and that executive branch to make all of those decisions. And that's what we're seeing on a national level and on a world level is whoever is the administration, they get to make the decision on where we are involved. And that's not what our Constitution was designed to have done.
Purple Heart recipient Chris Angett is with us, a 12-year career in the military. Actually joined the Army at age 17 in 2005 and the Grassroots Engagement Director for Concerned Veterans of America in Montana. And, you know, I like having this conversation, and I'm curious because I know that many you guys are part of the Americans for Prosperity. I've enjoyed, that grassroots organization. I think you guys keep it grassroots, Concerned Veterans for America. I think that you guys are keeping that grassroots as well. I appreciate that. And I appreciate engaging in this conversation as you guys have and have for a few years. Are you seeing any results from this? Just asking those questions, national security, is it our interests? Is it our prosperity? Is it fiscally responsible? Are you seeing any results from engaging that conversation more aggressively?
We absolutely are. And a lot of what we've used as talking points for our End Endless Wars campaigns and our withdrawal from Afghanistan, we actually got to see one of the presidential briefings. He used a lot of our talking points on why we no longer needed to be in Afghanistan. And we had veterans who were coming to the table who were like, hey, based on our foreign policy, this has affected my life and it's affected my family's life. And we need to tighten this up and we need to see if we can't fix this. And so we have veterans that are coming to the table and talking with our congressional delegation here in Montana and across the country and sharing these viewpoints and sharing how this foreign policy has messed up their lives and their families' lives. And when they actually bring those to the table and they tell their stories, we see movement, we see change, and we see people start to stand up and go, maybe we shouldn't be doing this. We absolutely are seeing that.
And there's some things that we should talk about, too, because it's not only this sort of foreign policy engagement, but you guys are also, and we'll get to that, too, and maybe even tease us into this next break. We've got about 2 minutes here. Concerned Veterans for America are doing an awful lot in changing, I think, the floor plan for veterans care, too.
We absolutely are. We were actually the organization behind the Mission Act of 2017, That was passed by Congress in 2017 and signed into law by the Trump administration in 2018 that allowed veterans to receive care outside of the VA if there was long wait times or they had to travel long distances to get care, which is great in rural Montana. There's places all across this great state that we have to travel far distances to get to just a hospital. And so it really tried to open the door so veterans could get quality access to care and in a timely fashion. And then also it tried to put together some AIR commission, the Asset and Infrastructure Review Commission, to modernize the VA and look at where are our resources within the VA and are they in the correct locations? Are they in the best places to actually help veterans or are they a drain on our VA system and it's causing more problems? And so really looking at what does that look like and what are the recommendations from this independent commission to change the needs of the VA to make sure veterans receive that care that they so richly deserve.
And let's talk more about that care because according to something from Concerned Veterans for America, there's still some work to be done. This was an article written in what would be November of last year. Critical of the current VA's approach toward community care. There's some things to show up there. War begins in Iraq in 2003, March 19th. That 20th anniversary is upcoming. We'll talk more about that as well with Chris Engett, who's Grassroots Engagement Director with Concerned Veterans for America in Montana on Voices of Montana.
When you're looking for traction from a farm tire, check out the hard-working, earth-gripping 23-degree Firestone tire. 23-degree tread bars take advantage of the added torque of today's high-horsepower tractor and prove superior to 45-degree tread bars in performance and productivity. Save more time, burn less fuel, be more productive with the 23-degree Firestone tire.
Firestone and Tire-Rama, the leader in the field, only at your local Montana and Wyoming Tire-Rama store.
Have you ever thought about making a difference in your community? Hi, I'm Colton Young from Obzorki, your Montana FFA First Vice President. FFA is a student-led organization that teaches students the value of hard work, dedication, and leadership. We believe in the future. Our goal is to create the leaders of tomorrow. If you want to make a difference in our state, choose FFA. For more information, visit MontanaFFA.org.
Thanks to Farmers Union Insurance for supporting FFA and this message.
We're looking at the anniversary here, March 19th, of the 2003 war in Iraq. And then also we talk about all these conflicts around the world. I did point you to Council on Foreign Relations Global Conflict Tracker. Again, you know, take everything as you would. But $3.37 trillion goes through the South China Sea on a $3.37 trillion. 40% of the global liquefied natural gas trade goes through the South China Sea. And here's something, again, from this website. I knew it was going on. 3,200 new acres of land that China has been creating. And there's a reason behind that, as we've talked about it. And this is specifically the Spratly Islands in 2013. That continues to go on here. As we see conflicts around the world, what is America's part in that? Back with Chris, that was the early part of the conversation. And I don't want to run out of time here in talking about your story, about how you got involved with grassroots advocacy on behalf of veterans, especially when it comes to getting care from the department, for the VA.
Yeah, so when I first came home from Afghanistan, like you had said at the very beginning, I was hit by an RPG in 2012. That's a rocket-propelled grenade. It detonated 5 feet from me, and I suffered a lot of tendon and muscle tissue damage. And so when I came home, the VA got me into have a surgery to correct the issues that were going on in my left foot. They told me that this is what they were going to do. They were going to reattach some of these tendons that had come severed and try to put it back together. And when I woke up from the surgery, they did a completely different surgery. They didn't even do the same thing that they told me that they were going to do. It's completely experimental. And to this point, there's not a single doctor I've ever been able to find that can look at my charts, look at my records, and tell me that this is the reason they needed to do what they did. There's no answers for me within that. And within the VA system, there's no recourse for that. And so I came home. All I had was the VA healthcare, so I had to keep going back to the system that obviously at the very beginning, at the outset, had failed me. And so I continued to go to the VA. I continued to get this subpar care where they would schedule me for an appointment and then cancel the appointment. And it would take 6 months to get in for these appointments. And finally, the next two surgeries that they gave me were to try to correct the issues that I had been on. And during this time, the VA's solution to a lot of issues with pain or things like that were just to throw medicine at it. And I got to the point I was on 16 different medication I was taking multiple times a day, starting to take different medication to take care of the side effects of the original medication. And just kept, it was this never ending ladder that just continued to climb.
Scary.
And my mental health really started to decline. And I went into the VA at one point when I pretty much hit my lowest. And I was like, I need to talk to somebody. I can't keep doing this. And they told me, We can get you into a counselor, but they're pretty booked out, so it's going to take 3 months. And it was a very, very, very dark time for me, waiting for that care and trying to get me back to the point where I could just walk again. And my fourth surgery was the last surgery that I had, and it was a successful surgery. But when I woke up from the surgery and the anesthesia, I was in incredible pain. The nerve block that they gave me didn't work, and I could feel everything that had happened. I had metal pins holding everything together, and when I woke up, the nurse came in and asked, you know, what's your pain level? I explained what my pain level was, in very colorful soldier terms, and they went and because I'd been on all this medication, they went and they got a shot of Dilaudid and a shot of fentanyl, which are very high level narcotics. And fentanyl is a big thing in Montana right now. We're seeing a lot of overdoses, and gave me both of those in order to try to get ahead of this pain that I was feeling. So she gave me the two shots. The nurse walked out of the room. Another nurse walked into the room literally that fast and asked, what's your pain level? And the medication didn't have time to actually kick in. I'm under anesthesia and just coming awake, so it's not like I could explain this is everything that's going on and everything that's happening. And so I shared with her that I was still in a lot of pain, and she got another shot of Dilaudid and another shot of fentanyl and gave me them again back to back. And the VA right here in Billings overdosed me on fentanyl. And I had to take Narcan to come back from that. And Narcan is a great invention. They were able to prevent my overdose and my death, but that also counters any side effect of any pain reliever whatsoever. And so what ends up happening is I'm not able to take anything, no Tylenol, no ibuprofen, nothing. And so for the next hour, I laid in that hospital bed right there in Billings in the most excruciating pain of my life because they couldn't give me anything else. And, I've just come to the realization for myself that I'm not sure the VA is trying to keep me alive. And if this is happening to me, how many other people is this happening? You know, I'm a combat veteran who's trying to deal with the combat injury. This should all be taken care of. This shouldn't ever be a concern of mine. If it's happening to me, how many other people is this happening to? How many other people is this failing? And I started looking into some things, and I'm a real passionate advocate for veteran suicide. Everyone knows 22 a day, and that number right now is about 27 and a half veterans a day that commit suicide. The number keeps rising. And so I really started to get involved. I tried to be a part of that statistic on two different occasions, and thankfully the good Lord didn't want me to go. And so I started reading the 2019 report from the VA that listed the new statistics for veteran suicide, and their report said 17 veterans a day commit suicide. And I'm like, well, something's happening. Something's working. This is exciting. And as I started reading through this report, I realized they took any active duty National Guard or reservist numbers out of their report. So it looks like on paper they're doing something to help veteran suicide. And when you go to the DOD website and you pull those same veteran suicide reports, you add them all together, and you were still at 22 veterans a day, and it infuriated me that the VA is going to change their report to make it look like they're doing something, and they're not. They're not actually solving the problem. And so that's actually what got me involved within the system. It wasn't necessarily my care and the lack of care that I didn't get. And through all of this time, the VA had me driving to Salt Lake City on a weekly basis for physical therapy instead of doing physical therapy in Billings. They'd send me to Sheridan for MRIs while there's an MRI machine in Billings. And the MRI was a terrible instance as well, because I still have a lot of shrapnel from the RPG blast. And they put me onto a table and strapped me to the table and put me into an MRI machine anyway.
Mm.
And yeah, it was not a fun experience.
No.
And I personally don't ever want to use the VA system. And there are a lot of veterans that are in the same place. They're not sure that the VA, that their mission and their goal is actually to take my health care seriously and do what's best for me.
Now, when you hear that story, Chris, when you hear, when we hear a veteran saying that, it's indicative of real problems. Are they systematic? I guess that's maybe a simple question. But what are some of those problems? Because I know that there are healthcare professionals. I think for the vast majority, they're in it for the right reason. They want to give good care, but
absolutely,
they're limited. Sometimes it's systematic. I guess, which is encouraging because you can address systematic problems.
Absolutely, and that's truly what we're seeing is that we're seeing that this system becomes a bureaucracy. And that's what becomes the problem. So you have a healthcare provider who is truly within his mind wants to do what's right and wants to help. That's why they get into medicine. That's why they do that. And then especially why they go to work for the VA,
mm-hmm.
Because they can make a lot more money in the private sector than they can make at the VA because they get a salary and that's what they're going to make at the VA. And so they're absolutely in it for the right reason. And I will absolutely say the majority of the people that I worked with within the VA system are great and amazing people.
But there were some serious mistakes. There were some serious mistakes in your care, though.
Absolutely. And so when you look at those situations, it's the system itself that failed. So when a provider, especially at one of these surgeries that it took 16 months for them to approve, you had a VA orthopedic surgeon who had been an orthopedic surgeon for over 20 years, and this was my last surgery, he said, this is what we need. This is what is going to require in order for you to be able to walk again. He writes up that request to have it approved, and he sends it into the system, into the bureaucracy, and then the process starts. And that's where they get to make the decision on whether I get that care or not. Instead of having it be between me and my physician on what I need for my care, that system gets to make that decision. And that doesn't, a lot of those people that are making those decisions, they don't have to be doctors. They don't have to have medical degrees. They look through the rules of the system and then make a decision based on those rules. Do I get this care or do I not get this care? And if they say no, maybe Salt Lake City will approve it. And so then I'm going to Salt Lake City or maybe Sheridan, Wyoming or whatever the case is to try to get that care. And so it was absolutely a systematic problem. And one of the things that actually helped with that was when the Mission Act was approved, because it allowed the veteran to get out of the VA system, to go to a private healthcare doctor and to receive that care, where you are going to see more of that patient and doctor conversation happen and get the care that the doctor and you have decided is best for your life. And when we get out of that, that's what we actually have seen, that veterans start receiving better health care, more quality health care, and in a much more timely fashion when it's utilized. But you had actually talked about it. The VA is actively dissuading at this current moment veterans from using Care in the Community program. And we've received scripts as Concerned Veterans for America Foundation, which is one of our sister organizations. They've received a lot of Freedom of Information Act information out of the VA system that is showing a lot of these systematic problems. And so when the VA is telling their administrators dissuade veterans from using Care in the Community and try to convince them to
Chris,
stay within
Chris,
the system.
I got to apologize here. We've run out of time and there was so many more questions. Stand by. I want to chat with you offline and we're back with Jim Brown in a bit.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
I got to finish up with Chris Engen. We were chatting with Chris. Chris, I appreciate your story, a Purple Heart recipient, and sharing that with us, your service. I appreciate that. As I mentioned earlier, you know, you had a unique job as you coordinated military funeral honors and participated in 1,100 of those. And I'm sure that's probably, I'm curious about that, how that has changed you, but a 12-year career. But I got to move on, but I have to ask how you're doing right now. You shared with us some of the struggles that you've had through the VA. I can't let you go without getting kind of a, where are you headed? How you doing?
Well, I definitely appreciate this conversation, Tom, and getting to share my story for sure. One of the things that I've really been able to do over the last several years is because of the Mission Act, I've been able to see a mental health counselor outside of the VA, and I've seen him for almost 3 years now, and I still see him today, and it's given me the opportunity to get my head screwed on right and figure out what's going on with my life and make decisions based on reality and not on emotion. And so I'm actually doing extremely well. The last surgery that the VA did have me do allows me to walk without a cane today. Oh. I was in a wheelchair for a while, and I walked with a cane for a long time. And now I can walk normally for the most part. And so I get out there, and I can do things. I can fish, and I can hike, and I can do some of those things that I wasn't able to for a long time. And so I'm doing very, very, very well. And I love Montana, and I love Billings, and I love the ability to reach out to other veterans and share that there is still hope. Just because this is the way it is today doesn't mean it has to be this way forever.
Chris, thank you. There's a lot of people going, yep, shaking their heads, yep, 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 to a lot of things you said there. We'll have you back on, okay? More to talk about.
Thank you so much, Tom. Yes, thank you.
Yep, that's Chris Engen, Concerned Veterans for America, the Montana chapter. It's CV, the number 4A. CV4A.org for more information.